Okay, so welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone, one of our one-to-one specials that we do now and again. And the player that I have on this show is an individual who recently announced her retirement from the professional game. Over 100 caps for the Canadian Women's National Team, bronze medal winner over here in London, where I'm from, in 2012. Kaylin Kyle joins me on the line. Kaylin, how are you?
I'm doing really well, thank you.
Really good to hear. Really good to hear. We know that you are now basing yourself in Atlanta. Recently, as I said in the introduction, you announced your retirement from professional women's soccer. Just want to get a bit of insight into your thinking as to why now, still only in your late 20s, plenty of years ahead of you if you chose to carry on. Why did you decide to announce your retirement at this point?
Yeah, I think for me, obviously it's always going to be a hard decision, but I grew up in a family where my dad was a professional athlete as well, and just being, you know, friends with loads of professional athletes, I talked to a lot of people before I made my decision, and the one thing that was in common with all of them was you'll know when it's the right time. And I think for me, especially with the national team, obviously John was slowly starting to change his team, and I didn't want to be, you know, that 38-year-old still trying to make a squad, and I wanted to go out on my own terms, and I wanted to feel proud of what I've done and, you know, not be disappointed that I wasn't getting selected for this camp, that camp. And I think for me, especially with the national team, I've been, you know, so proud to represent Canada for so many years, and especially at such a young age, and, you know, play over 100 games with the senior team and have, I think I'm third for most consecutive starts on that team. So there's a lot of stuff that I am so proud of, medals obviously that we won. But I think just for me, it was the time, you know, just to say goodbye to that part of my life. And, you know, that was really tough just because of, you know, the fans and my family, because I'm so proud to represent Canada and, you know, represent Saskatchewan where I was born and raised. And then, you know, just a lot of, I've met a lot of good people throughout playing with Canada, you know, players on the team, the technical staff, I mean, our trainers and stuff. So our manager that, you know, has been with, you know, me since day one on that team, Maeve Glass, sorry, we call them managers. I know you call the coaches managers in England, but, you know, she's, you know, been my mother figure when we've, you know, moved to Italy. We moved there before the first World Cup that I took part in. So it's been tough to say goodbye to those people, but, you know, I've had a few weeks to kind of just relax and be Kaylin Kyle outside of soccer. And, you know I made the right decision.
Head coaches, managers, Kaylin, don't you worry. We've got plenty of listeners from North America who will know what you're talking about. Doesn't matter what us ignorant Brits think. It's not a problem at all. Don't you worry. I mean, you mentioned there the kind of the change in personnel that John Herdman was starting to phase in with Canada. You mentioned there that you obviously maybe weren't being picked as regular. You were announced as an alternate for the Rio Olympics. When was it that you realised, actually, do you know what, this probably isn't going to happen for me, and it may be time to think about what the next move is?
Yeah, I think for me it was, you know, I was obviously very grateful to get selected as an alternate for Rio. But I think it was, you know, once that Rio tournament ended, I knew that was kind of my time to, I needed to make a decision whether, you know, I continue to work my butt off and try to get selected. And, you know, I've never been scared of hard work at all. I've worked hard my whole entire life, you know, being born and raised in Saskatchewan, it's not a soccer city. So I know what hard work's about. I know what dedication's about. But I think for me it was just, and it's not that I don't love the game. I'm still so passionate about it. I love football. It was just, you know, there was just something in my heart telling me, like, it's time to take that next step in your life. And I know a lot of people have said, you know, you're only 28, but just with the national team, I knew it was that time, and I knew it was the time to know, let someone else take over, you know, the number 6 jersey and represent Canada like I did for so many years. And I'm so grateful for that. But yeah, I just knew it was just that time for me.
What was interesting about your announcement note that you put on social media was that you said, I'm announcing my retirement from Canada soccer. Now, there was no mention in there about club opportunities. We saw a former teammate of yours at Orlando Pride, Becky Edwards, announce her retirement last year and then decided this year to actually return to club soccer with Kristianstad in Sweden. Have you left the door open for potential opportunities in the future at club level, Kaylin, or is that it? You're done with soccer?
Yeah, of course, I'm never going to shut that door. Obviously, I'm so passionate about football, and I absolutely love it. I think my time in the NWSL, though, is closed. Obviously, I think the league's growing, which is great. You have players like Marta coming over, but I also have seen the dark side of it, where I'm just like, I think I'm good with the NWSL. So I'll never close doors, you know, obviously because I am so passionate about it, and, you know, I'm dating another soccer player. So, if there was an opportunity that came arise, obviously I would talk to, you know, the people that mean the most to me and see where I am at that part in my life and in that stage in my life. But yeah, no. So I would never close a door, but I would definitely say right now, football for me, I am pursuing other options as of right now. So
I want to talk about the many highlights in your career, as we've mentioned in the intro, winning a bronze medal. I'd like to talk about that Olympic journey that you had in London. But you mentioned there, and we did discuss it briefly before coming on to the recording, about you mentioned there the dark side of the NWSL. Now, I don't want to delve too deep because that's your business, and I'm sure you'd rather keep a lot of it to yourself. But one of the things we did discuss was you never really got the opportunity to call somewhere home, did you? You played, I think, for 5 different NWSL clubs, moved around, were based in every area of the country, weren't you? On the West Coast with Portland and Seattle, the centre with Houston, and then the East Coast with Orlando and Boston. How difficult is that? Maybe it's something that we take for granted as media and fans, but when you are moved around so much in such a short space of time, how difficult is that for not just for Kaylin Cole the player, but for Kaylin Cole the person as well?
Yeah, I think, you know, what a lot of people don't understand is all the work that we put into it. And I think a lot of that goes unnoticed. So it's like a lot of people joke on Twitter about me getting traded, but it happens to so many people in the league because the league is so small and it's continuing to grow. It's just that's the reality of it. But the thing is there's really no security. So, I mean, you can get dropped at any point and not get paid. So I mean, you could be 2 weeks into the season and then decide to sign someone from overseas and you're dropped and you're not paid. So you did sign a contract for that year, but you're not paid out for that year like a lot of other professional sports teams are. So that's one thing that's, you know, it's really tough to look at. I know the league is growing and, you know, I'm as proud to play in the league, but like in Seattle, you know, I had to ask for a trade there because I was playing center back. I didn't want to go anywhere. I absolutely love Seattle. You know, Laura Harvey's an amazing, amazing woman. Ownership there is fantastic. But that was kind of, you know, my first start in the NWSL. I did really well there. I enjoyed playing center back. But a lot of fans look at that and was like, oh, she was unhappy playing it. You know, it wasn't my choice, to be honest, me asking for a trade there. It came from somewhere else. So I just think there's so many things that go on behind the scenes that people don't see, and they'll just put a, you know, a name on it. Oh, Kaylin, like, is spoiled. Oh, she wasn't great for this. It has nothing to do with that. I mean, I would play football until my legs fell off, to be honest. But I just think, you know, at this point in my life, it was, you know, obviously I'm not funded by Canada right now. And, you know, it was, do I want to start the next stage in my life or take a risk playing for a team for basically little money and not having any security? And I've just never been that type of person. I'm ready for that next step in my life and for a different, you know, future, and, you know, kind of taking my decisions into my own hands for once. And I think because I've been traded so many times within the NWSL that kind of made my decision easy. And, you know, with how everything happened, you know, leaving in Orlando, it was kind of, you know, when you get that wake up call where you're like, right, it's, you know, the decision's in your hands. I have my green card now, which is incredible feeling. You know, I have all the options in the world now, but I just think a lot of people don't really see what goes on behind the scenes and doesn't really understand how the NWSL ruling works. So that was one of my major things, is just security. And it's a lot of players. I mean, you read a lot of retirement stories of people retiring from the NWSL at age, you know, 24, 23 to, you know, finish up school or take a professional career. And that's why, because it's security at the end of the day. You know, it's a job where you can't just get fired in week two and not get paid for the rest of the season. So, and we're not getting paid a lot of money, you know what I mean? So we do it because we love it, and we do it because we're passionate of the game.
It kind of came full circle for you, didn't it? You mentioned there you had your time in Seattle. You go there in the first season. You start the season midfield, move to centre back. I know that you've said that not your preferred position. And then kind of the same thing happened in Orlando, didn't it? You start the season in Orlando as a midfielder. You then, due to injuries and circumstance, finish the season in Orlando in defence as well. I know that the ending in Orlando didn't quite go as you would have hoped. I know you were very, you know, very upset, I think this is fair to say. And was that kind of the final straw when things didn't work out in Orlando? You kind of thought, this is it. You know, there is, like you say, I'm done with the NWSL. This is, it's time for me to think of something else.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I don't know. Like, for me, playing center back has nothing to do with it. I absolutely, to be completely honest, I love center back. And I think, you know, because I understand the game and I can read the game well, and I love getting on the ball facing forward already, center back was kind of a no-brainer. So I was actually the one that went to Tom in Orlando and said, look, like, I know we're losing a lot of players in for the Olympics and obviously with injury, and I'm more than willing to step up. And you know, he was quite surprised because obviously he had read stuff within the media of like my trade from Seattle, but that had nothing to do with me. I love center back, so that's just like another thing. And you know, we had a laugh about it because he was like, oh well, you know, the media, you know, and stories that come out say differently. I'm like, well, that's, you know, they usually do unless it's coming from a player. But I've never really been someone, I guess until now on this podcast with you, to kind of really speak the truth and open up about it. You know, I love football. Like, I don't think people realize how passionate I am. You know, you look at my Instagram and yeah, it's selfies and at the beach and whatnot, but I love football. I'm passionate about it. But I think, you know, with how everything ended in Orlando, it was, you know, all the windows had closed for me to go overseas at that point when they dropped me. And that's the security that I'm talking about. It's just, that's just not something how I want to. If I was getting paid 100% million dollars here and there and I'm guaranteed a full season, absolutely. But that's not how women's soccer is working right now. So it was just, you know, it was a decision. Do I stick around and find a team, or, you know, am I ready to move on to something else? So commentating or marketing for, you know, sports businesses. So I have a lot of opportunities coming my way. And it was just at that point in this stage of my life, it was kind of, you know, a no-brainer to me.
I want to come on to Canada shortly because there's a lot of nice things to talk about that. And certainly some, you know, plenty of good things in club football as well. I know that it didn't quite in the way that you would have hoped, but you know, the number of years that you spent in the NWSL, and obviously you had a stint in Sweden not so long ago as well, and played a long time for the Vancouver Whitecaps as well. You mentioned there about the perception that people have sometimes. You know, I think it's fair to say, quite active on social media, and you do like to post a picture and by the beach or whatever it might be, but you're not the only one. There's kind of this balance, isn't there, of there are people crying out for more access to players in terms of learning more about their lives off the pitch. And you're one of those, along with many others, that actually give a good insight. Do you think that sometimes people's social media profiles can make them maybe a little bit misunderstood?
Oh, 100%. And like, I'm really honest. Like, at the end of the day, I work my butt off, but I'm going to enjoy a glass of wine and french fries here and there. That's, you know, that's being a human at the end of the day. And I think for me, I take care of myself so well, and I have been for so long. I've been a really good professional that I don't mind opening up and, you know, posting a photo with me and my girlfriends out at dinner at wine, because that's just being a human at the end of the day, you know. And I like sharing that with fans. I like sharing, you know, my hair secrets or my clothing secrets for different things. But I think a lot of people, I'm not someone to, you know, have my phone in the gym every morning at 9 a.m. that I go, telling people, you know, in the gym working hard. It's just something that I do. So behind closed doors, yeah, I work out every morning at 9 a.m. and I'm in there till about 11. So it's just, you know, and then a lot of athletes do it that way. So there's no right or wrong way. I guess I just have a different way on social media, and that's how I love engaging with my fans. And, you know, I've always had like great comments back to me, and, you know, we really love your page. We love to see what you're doing. Like, but yeah, I guess it's just like an athlete's choice at the end of the day of what they, you know, want to do and what they want to share and how they want to be perceived.
Absolutely. I'm sure the good far outweighs the bad, any reaction that comes on social media. Well, I mentioned Canada. You had a long, illustrious career with your national team. You've spoken about how proud you were to represent them. Made your debut, I think it was back in 2008. I think I've got written down here that you made your debut against the United States in a 4-0 defeat. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Now, I know that obviously the result doesn't go your way, but what do you remember about that debut? What do you remember about the build-up and the nerves that you felt?
Well, I remember playing against the U.S., and obviously the U.S. is an incredible team. I mean, they have so much depth. Their organization has done so well, you know, with all their youth programs and their ODP programs, that their player pool, I mean, they could at the end of the day, they could have two American national teams, whether people want to admit it or not. They could. I mean, you see it within the league. There's so many good American players that haven't even gotten a look in. So I remember coming onto the field, I was like shitting myself. I was so scared. And I was like, he was like, all right. So I like went in, and you know, I don't remember too much because I was like, just don't screw up, just don't screw up. I think I only touched the ball maybe twice. But you know, it's just a good experience to get that, you know, first cap under your belt. It just, I don't know, I've never been someone to get really nervous for games. It's just kind of how I think, because I've been around sports for so long, I never really get nervous, I guess you can say. But that game I was definitely nervous because I didn't want to screw up. I wanted to get another call back in with the national team. My first U20 game, actually, I got a red card, so I was like, just whatever you do, do not get a red card your first senior cap. But no, I mean, it was exciting. It kind of just went from there. And yeah, I mean, I've met a load of great people, you know, playing for Canada, and, you know, obviously the organization, the Vancouver Whitecaps, I owe them everything. Without them, I definitely wouldn't be the player I am today. They took a chance on Saskatchewan player, really allowed me to grow and strong under them, and it's like a family there. I mean, the ownership, if you see them in Vancouver, they're always like, hey, Kaylin, how are you? And, you know, the fan support there is incredible, and I love the organization as a whole. And, you know, I hope one day they do get a women's team and I can, you know, maybe come out back and work for them in some sort of capacity, because I am so passionate about Vancouver. I kept this thing that they're just a phenomenal organization in all sports.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
So welcome back. We have Kaylin Carl in our one-to-one special for Women's Soccer Zone. Kaylin, we've spoken a lot about club career and the NWSL. We started to have a little bit of a chat about Canada and your debut. I want to talk a little bit about the teammates that you had on that side, because you mentioned in the first half of this interview about the people that you met along the way. The one thing that I always noticed from social media and YouTube videos and just general banter seemed to be very good camaraderie in that team.
Yeah, I mean, God, like everyone, like you, people always ask, oh, who was the funniest? Who did you get on with the best? And obviously you have your close group always on any team, but everyone there was just like, they're just such good people, and I don't know if it's just a Canadian thing. I'd like to think it is, but I mean, you have your Carmelina Moscato, your Melissa Tancredi, your Emily Zers, your Janelle Fuenos, Karina LeBlanc. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. But it was just such a cool team. And I mean, a lot of those girls, I mean, I still talk to and still text all the time, and they're some of my best friends. And, you know, I always look to advice for them, and I did look to advice for them when I was thinking of retiring. So, yeah, it's special, you know. Sports, I think one thing about sport that is very cool, I feel like it makes people or individuals just like a really good rounded person. And, you know, you're put in situations where, yeah, you're not going to get on with everyone, but you got to make it work. And I think that has a lot to do, you know, in the business world as well. You're going to run across people that some days you want to knock out, and then the other day you have to go into a business meeting with them. So I've learned a lot along the way, and a lot of that has to do with sport, and I'm so thankful for it.
One of the things that always interests me about the Canadian Women's National Team is some of the, as I mentioned, the YouTube videos and some of the singing and the dancing that kind of went on. I don't want to know who the funniest is. I want to know, Kaylin, the question that everyone wants to know the answer to: who is the best dancer in that Canadian Women's National Team?
Well, obviously me. That's a no-brainer. No, I'm just kidding. It depends what kind of style you like. I mean, Carmelina has, like, the awkward, weird style that is, like, gets everyone on the dance floor. Melissa Tancredi is more of our, like, little Spanish dancers. She's really good. Desi Scott is just, like, Desiree and Kadisha Buchanan are really, really good dancers. Everyone has their own little flair. I have, like, the white girls dance down pat, so... I would say, yeah. No, but I mean, there's so many good dancers.
It's difficult for me to pick out individuals. You mentioned there Kadisha Buchanan. Obviously, she's currently over here in Europe playing for Lyon. We've got Ashley Lawrence playing in France as well with PSG. Just give a bit of insight into them too, because they made the big decision not to go into the NWSL draft this year. They're playing over in France. They're both going to be playing in UEFA Women's Champions League final. I'm not going to ask if you're surprised by this, the progress they've made so quickly, but how impressed are you maybe by how well they've done in such a short space of time?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, they're both incredible athletes, incredible people, actually, firstly. But they're both so smart in soccer, and they both love it. And you can see it in their play. They're so passionate about it. I mean, they both watch soccer faithfully, so you can see that in their play. I mean, they play older than their age shows. And I played with them a little bit longer than Ash, but Ash, you know, came into the team, you know, a bit young, a bit scared, and would get minutes here and there, and now she's a full-time starter, and it's so well-deserved. I mean, she's an incredible athlete. You can put her anywhere on the field, and she'll do well, and that shows. I mean, they're playing the Champions final coming up, which is, you know, a girl's dream, so it's pretty special to see, and I think it's really paving the way for not only our Canadian national team, but, you know, Canadian players in general, both men and female side.
Great to hear. Obviously, the two will be facing off in the UEFA Women's Champions League final on the 1st of June in Cardiff. But coming back to you and your Canada team, no doubt, I'm sure the highlight of your career was London 2012, having the opportunity to play in Olympic Games and of course, winning a bronze medal. Talk about that whole experience of London 2012 and being a part of that team and playing in that third place game and winning a medal.
Oh, it was incredible. I mean, you can go back and talk about that U.S. game all you want. I mean, the past, but that bronze medal game, I mean, we had no business winning that. I think they had about 4 breakaways, hit 3 crossbars. But when Diana Maston put that ball in the back of the net, I knew we had won the game, and it was like one of the coolest feelings in the world. I remember looking over because I knew where my family was sitting. I came on and subbed that game, and I looked at my dad, and I like had tears in my eyes, and I was like, "We've just done it!" Obviously, I threw a little bit of a swear word in there. I won't now that we're on podcast, but and he looked at me, and he's like, "Get your ass back down! Like, there's still a couple minutes left." And it was one of the coolest feelings ever. I had tears in my eyes for the last like good minute and a half of that game, and you know when they blew that final whistle, and you know you're with your best friends in the world, sharing one of the greatest memories that I'm gonna, you know, be that old lady telling my grandkids like about it. It's truly special, and I always say, like, you know, that's one thing money can't buy is moments like that, and you know, there's no amount of money in the world that can express and show how I felt in that moment, and you know how I always remember that, and it was a lot to do with, like, you know, all the work that gets put in on notice, and, you know, all the weekends that, you know, you're in bed at 9 and weddings that you're missing and, you know, family get-togethers you're missing. And it's for those little moments. And, you know, my boyfriend, he said to me the other day, he was like, you know, sport knocks you on your ass 90% of the time, but that 10% is like what keeps most athletes going. And it's so true. It's incredible. Like it's truly one of the greatest jobs you can have in the world. It's, you know, getting those moments where you're like, wow, like, we just did that. And, I am, like I just said, I'm going to be that grandma around Christmas time being like, showing my medal to be like, oh my goodness, like, get out of here.
Where is your medal? Where is your medal right now?
It's here in Atlanta with me. It's usually at home in Saskatchewan with my family, but I've needed it for a couple of events. So yeah, it's in Atlanta with me.
Because it's quite a surreal situation that you found yourself in, isn't it? Because you won the third place match against France, and then you have to travel to Wembley Stadium for the medal ceremony, don't you?
Yeah, I remember. So after the bronze medal match, we actually thought we were getting the medals there, but then we were notified, actually, you go to Wembley. And so I told my parents and my sister and her husband, and so they actually made the trip. So they rented this little car, like, got through all the traffic, finally got to Wembley, and obviously it's chaotic. There's 16,000 people, and I remember I know it's a big stadium, but I saw them coming down the stairs as soon as our flag was rising, and I started crying again, and I couldn't see them after, obviously, because it's just, like, it was so secured and everything like that. So that was the only part where it kind of sucked. I couldn't share that medal with them right away. My sister actually didn't see it until a couple months later when I went over to Ireland, where she lives, and brought it so she could see it. So that was the only disappointing thing. I really wish I could have shared that moment with them after, but it was just so chaotic. And then we had to jump on the bus and go do interviews back at the village. So, but yeah, so it was still a really cool, though, moment. I FaceTimed them from the hotel and showed them, and yeah, it was pretty special.
I know it must have been, you know, a little bit strange because you stood there at Wembley Stadium. You've got probably the majority of the stadium in neutral. You've then got American and Japanese fans. But what do you remember, and how special was it standing on that podium, looking around, you know, a beautiful stadium like Wembley, and being able to get that bronze medal?
It was the best moment ever. I mean, the best part for me wasn't actually receiving the medal. It was when all the three flags were hanging, and when our national anthem was playing. You know, you have all the American, the Japan flag, and then our flag, and just like looking at that flag, and just like so many. I remember looking down, because it was on the end. I was looking down at my teammates, and I was like, wow. Like, all the work we put in since we were 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. I mean, I moved away to Vancouver when I was, you know, 12 to play with the Vancouver team there. It's just, like, it was all worth it. And it was just that final moment where you're like, wow, like, just taking it all in. And it wasn't about the medal at that moment. It, for me anyways, like, I can't speak for anyone else. It was just about, like, literally all the work that you put in for a moment like this. And, you know, all the people that have backed you, and to get to where, like, we were, that's all I was thinking. I was like, I cannot wait to get home, throw a big party at my house with all my friends and family, have a few glasses of wine, and celebrate what we've done together. And, you know, obviously we won as a team, but, you know, without my family, I wouldn't have been there for sure. So that was what was going through my head, was like, oh, I can't wait to get home and, you know, share this with my family and my friends.
And then, obviously, after that,
have a few cocktails at the athlete.
Of course, it would be rude not to. It would be rude not to when you've just won an Olympic medal. If you can't have a drink when you've won an Olympic bronze medal, when can you have a drink? But no, fair play, Kane. Exactly. It was. I was in Wembley Stadium that night, and it was pretty special to see the three teams receiving their medals in front of 80,000 fans, and at a sport that supposedly nobody likes. So, you know, it's.
Yeah, exactly.
It was pretty special, but. 2012 was obviously a real big moment for Canadian soccer, because you then have the preparation that goes into your first home World Cup, 2015. You get the opportunity to represent your country in a major tournament, the biggest tournament there is, in front of your home supporters. I guess, number one, how was the build up to that in terms of the preparation and being around your teammates and the excitement that built up? And number two, maybe give some thoughts on that tournament as a whole.
Yeah, I think for the build-up for that tournament, coming off a massive win in London, we wanted to do really well at our home World Cup. And, you know, talking to people that we knew that held the Germany one in 2011, it's harder than people seem. Like, I think a lot of people outside views looking in, oh, it's a home World Cup, like, you have so much support behind you. Like, but it is very nerve-wracking. I mean, everything you're doing every single day leading up to that, we had, you know, you were under a microscope, media wanted all your attention, your sponsors wanted to do stuff with you because there's a lockout date where you can't do anything with them. So it was a lot, so it was definitely needed to manage it. We had an amazing mental guy that came in and worked with us, and his name's Alex, and he's phenomenal. You know, without him, I don't think we would have been as focused as we needed to be. For that, you know, the first opening match in Edmonton. And I remember walking out into that stadium, and I was a sub that first game, and obviously the subs go out first and came out of the tunnel, and I remember we walked out and it was like a roar as if someone scored, and it was like I had chills running up and down my body, because for the first time ever in Canadian soccer, when you looked into the crowd, it was actually people wearing Canadian soccer jerseys, not your Canadian hockey jerseys with Crosby on the back. And that to me was like a game changer. I was like, wow, we've really done something here in Canada. And it sent chills through my spine. Like, it was phenomenal. It was just so cool to see, and little kids, you know, with little Sinclair jerseys on and Kyle jerseys on. It was remarkable. It was so, so cool. And it was a tough tournament, because it was a cross-country tournament, right? So it was, you know, we had charter flights, which was really nice to get us to and from the game, so we didn't have to go through security and stuff at the airports. But you know, it was a lot. It was really hard, and it was tough schedules, tough games. And obviously, you know, when we lost that game versus England and BC Place, that we considered, you know, a home stadium for us, because we played loads there. It was tough. I never felt so sad in my life. And that's when I said, you know, 90% of the time sport's going to kick you in the ass, and the other 10, you know, you get those little moments. But that was definitely one of those 90% moments where I felt gutted, and I was like, oh, all the work that we put in to lose that match at home in front of our, you know, friends and family, it really tore at me. But I'm still so proud of of what we did and what we accomplished, and, you know, hosting a very successful Women's World Cup, you know, and gaining more fan support for our team. That's something that I'm continuing to do since being retired, is I want to grow the game in Canada, even though I'm not playing for the national team anymore, whether that's, you know, getting into the grassroots level and doing my academies, or, you know, going to school visits and just talking to kids and, you know, instilling confidence in them that they can really do anything they set their mind to. That's, you know, that's my job now. And I think a lot of athletes, once they retire, they couldn't be bothered, but that's just something, you know, maybe it's because I'm, you know, a small town prairie girl, where I think it's massively huge and I need to continue to do it. And I really won't stop doing that.
How much pressure did you feel going into that World Cup? We've talked about it being the first major tournament that Canada had hosted at senior level, and obviously coming off the back of the 2012 bronze win in London. I guess one of the things that made it even more difficult for you guys was there was so much talk about the fact that the majority of the tournament was being played on turf. That kind of dominated the conversation in the lead up to the competition, not the fact that a really, really highly respected and high achieving team was hosting and there was going to be this amazing tournament with lots of high caliber teams, but the turf debate dominated the conversation. How much pressure did you guys feel going into that competition, knowing that you'd have to perform not only for your own fans, but to make sure that people were focusing on the soccer and you guys and not the turf situation?
Yeah, I think I can't speak on behalf of my other teammates, but for me, for sure, and I know a lot of other girls on my team, the turf issue, obviously, everyone in the world wants to play on grass. I mean, if anyone tells you they'd rather play on turf than grass, they're lying. But at that moment, we didn't want to take away from what Canada and what Canada soccer had done for the sport. And we knew, because obviously we were training and living in Canada, how much work was going on behind the scenes. So for us to comment on the turf situation, we would never do that. Because at the end of the day, I think everyone is smart enough to know that, yeah, we would have loved to play on grass. Everyone would have. But at the end of the day, we were just so proud to be hosting, you know, the biggest tournament in women's sport in soccer at home, that we didn't want to take away from that. And we'd play in mud if it came down to it, because we were, you know, we were just so proud to be hosting such an incredible tournament. And, you know, Canada Soccer and all the event staff did such an incredible job. I don't think they slept for like 6 years leading up to it, but they just did such a great job. So, and I think the tournament was a big success. And, you know, there's only so much you can say about it. It's happened in the past. I can't go back and change, you know, turf to grass now in all the stadiums. But obviously, at the end of the day, everyone would have loved to have played on grass. But I don't think that took anything away from the tournament. It was a really well put on tournament.
Hey, we loved it over here in England. We got a bronze medal. So, you know, people talk very fondly of Canada 2015
yeah,
over here. Believe
know.
Me, very fondly. But, I mean, one of the things that you kind of talked about, we've spoken about some of your teammates and the pressures that came with being at that tournament. Talk to me a little bit about Christine Sinclair, because obviously recently she passed Mirham's goal scoring record, now only second behind Abby Wambeck, arguably the face of that Canadian team for a number of years, going into that tournament, a lot of weight on her shoulders, but just also this week been nominated for the BBC Women's Footballer of the Year. Talk about her influence and impact on you, because from the outside looking in, such a role model, such a special player to have on your team. Talk a bit about her influence on your career.
Yeah, I honestly don't think she's human, to be fair. I remember when I was like a young girl, I had her poster and Carmelina Moscato's poster up on my wall. I know it's so embarrassing to admit, but they always make fun of me for it. I remember going to my first U19 World Championship. It was held in Edmonton. I drove down there with my sister and got to watch them in person. And that's when I was like, I'm going to play with them someday. And now they're, you know, some of my best friends, which is so weird. But the thing that, you know, that sucks with Christine Sinclair, we've never won a massive championship. So, you know, she gets overlooked for all these massive awards, where I think she should have won them back-to-back years. I think Christine Sinclair has been one of the best, you know, strikers in the world for years, and that's not taking away from, you know, other players by any means, but I think with the likes of players that have been winning, they've won championships. And I know, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, I just think, like, even some years where Christine Sinclair is left off the list, like, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, I'm like, who's voting for these? Like, but I'm also maybe biased. I think she's such an incredible person, both on and off the field. She's remarkable, all the stuff that she's been through in her life, and she's just always so positive, and she's the hardest working player
both on and off the pitch. And, you know, I looked up to her as a fan, and I still look up to her as a player and as a friend now. And I'll always continue to, because I don't think I've ever heard her complain once. She just gets on with it. She's not caught up in all like the hype around her, where, you know, a lot of superstars get caught up in that. She's just such a down-to-earth person, and I just love her to death. I think the world of her.
Well, I'm conscious of time, and I'm pulling you away from the Atlanta Sun at the moment, so I've got a couple more. We mentioned that you obviously you finished up with the Canadian women's national team kind of just before the Rio Olympics. What you saw in terms of the transition of players, we're seeing a number of young players coming through. We've mentioned the likes of Ashley Lawrence and Kadisha Buchanan. There are many others that I could reel off. Janine Becky's another one that really impressed at the Olympics. How hopeful are you that this Canadian team can continue to progress and maybe even make a run at the 2019 World Cup?
Oh, I have no doubts in my mind. I mean, they're under great coaching staff. You can tell they're quicker, they're faster, they're more dynamic. Obviously, that comes with youth, but I mean, they're smart. They're smart footballers because they do have a good coach that's instilling a lot of knowledge into them. And they're all playing in really top leagues where, you know, a lot of us growing up, we didn't have that opportunity. So they're only going to continue to get better and better and better. And I can't wait to watch as a fan and, you know, hopefully commentate on some of the games, you know, at the World Championships and Olympics, and, you know, be able to interview the girls after winning a gold medal.
So I was going to finish off. Obviously, we're doing an interview on you. It would be silly to otherwise finish on anything other than you. But you've mentioned there, and you actually mentioned a couple of times during the interview, commentating, media. Is that potentially something that you're currently pursuing at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been passionate about it, and just, you know, watching on TV and even being interviewed, you know, you always, you know, you learn bits and pieces of what to ask, what not to ask. And obviously, like I said, I'm really knowledgeable about the game, so I'm comfortable, you know, speaking with people. So it's definitely something I want to pursue, because I don't want to feel like I'm missing the game, and I feel like that'll, you know, keep me involved in some way and capacity. Obviously, I'm still going to be doing my coaching, but I would just absolutely love that. And, you know, to be able to travel and, you know, commentate in cool parts of the world and continue the thing I love, it's definitely something in my future.
Well, final question, fondest memory. We've talked a lot about highlights and some of the darker places as well, but fondest memory over your career?
I think all the friends that I've met within the U.S. playing on so many teams I've met, I have two fond memories. All the like amazing women I've met in the U.S., I think there's just so many incredible people that I've crossed paths with, and I'll be friends with them for a lifetime. And then obviously, you know, that Olympic Games, it's something I'll never forget, and the friendships I made there. More for me, I mean, I can win medals and do very well, but it's, you know, the people I've met along the way, I think those are my memories that I hold on to the dearest.
Well, Kaylin, it's been a genuine pleasure. Maybe I will bump into you in a press box at a stadium somewhere in the world in the future when you are commentating on World Cups and Olympic Games. But fascinating to get a bit of insight into what was a really wonderful career. Over 100 caps for your country, a bronze medal for your country at London 2012. Thank you so much for joining me.
No, thank you so much for having me.
And thank you very much, listeners, for tuning in. We'll be back next week with our usual podcast. Until then, take care of yourselves and bye-bye.